ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय तथा ऊर्ध्वं ब्रह्मचर्यं धारयन् आजुहोत् प्रभु त्रयोदशशब्दसहस्रम् अग्निहोत्रम् अखण्डितम् Mother Sita, after Mother Sita entered the earth, Lord Ramchandra observed complete celibacy and performed an uninterrupted Agnihotra, Yajna, for 13,000 years. Smaratam Hridivinyasya Vidham dandaka kantakai supada pallavam rama atma jyotir agat tata. After completing the sacrifice, Lord Ramchandra, whose lotus feet were sometimes pierced by thorns when he lived in Dandakaranya, place these lotus feet in the hearts of those who always think of him. Then he entered his own abode, the Vaikuntha planet, beyond the Brahmajyoti. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The lotus feet of the Lord are always a subject matter for meditation for devotees. Sometimes when Lord Ramchandra wandered in the forest of Dandakaranya, thorns pricked his lotus feet. The devotees, upon thinking of this, would faint. The Lord does not feel pain or pleasure from any action or reaction of this material world. But the devotees cannot tolerate even the pricking of the Lord's lotus feet by a thorn. This was the attitude of the gopis when they thought of Krishna wandering in the forest with pebbles and grains of sand pricking his lotus feet. This tribulation in the heart of a devotee cannot be understood by karmis, jnanis, or yogis. The devotees who could not tolerate even thinking of the Lord's lotus feet being pricked by a thorn were again put into tribulation by thinking of the Lord's disappearance. For the Lord had to return to his abode after finishing his pastimes in this material world. The word Atmajyoti is significant. The Brahmajyoti, which is greatly appreciated by jnanis or monistic philosophers who desire to enter into it for liberation, is nothing but the rays of the Lord's body. Yasya prabha prabha vadanto jagadanda koti kotishvashesha vishudhadi viputi pinnam tad brahma nishkalamanantam ashesha bhutam govindam adipurusham tamaham bhajami. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is endowed with great power. The glowing effulgence of his transcendental form is the impersonal Brahman, which is absolute, complete, and unlimited, and which displays the varieties of countless planets with their different opulences in millions and millions of universes. The Brahma Jyoti is the beginning of this spiritual world, and beyond the Brahma Jyoti are the Vaikuntha planets. In other words, the Brahma Jyoti stays outside the Vaikuntha planets, just as the sunshine stays outside the sun. To enter the sun planet, one must go through the sunshine. Similarly, when the Lord or his devotees enter the Vaikuntha planets, they go through the Brahma Jyoti. The jnanis or monistic philosophers, because of their impersonal conception of the Lord, cannot enter into the Vaikuntha planets, but they also cannot stay eternally in the Brahma Jyoti. Thus, after some time, they fall again in this material world. Aruya krishtrena paramparam tathapatyantyato nandrita yushmarangrayaha. The Vaikuntha planets are covered by the Brahma Jyoti, and therefore one cannot properly understand what those Vaikuntha planets are. Unless one is a pure devotee. After completing the sacrifice, Lord Ramchandra, whose lotus feet were sometimes pierced by thorns when he lived in Dandakaranya, placed those lotus feet in the hearts of those who always think of him. Then he entered his own abode, the Vaikuntha planet beyond the Brahma Jyoti. We are reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 11, entitled Lord Ramchandra Rules the World, Texts 18 and 19. The narrator of Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Shukadev Goswami, has given a very condensed, essential summary of the great scripture Ramayana of Valmiki Muni in this one chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. Taking some of the most essential lessons that the Lord revealed through this incarnation. The last few verses over these past days have described Sita's entering into the earth. For many, this is a very difficult part of Ramayana to hear, to think about, or to speak about. And it is very common that people who discuss Ramayana very conveniently do not address this particular part of the realm, the Lord's Leela. But here we find Shukadev Goswami in the vast book of Ramayana, tens and thousands of slokas. He's only speaking one short chapter, and there's about four or five verses of that chapter about this only. He could have easily left this part out. Srimad Bhagavatam is the Nigamakalpataroa Galitam Balam. It is the ripened fruit, the essence, the cream of all the knowledge of all the scriptures, of the Vedas, of all the scriptures throughout creation for all time. Parikshit Maharaj had 7 days to live. Shukadev Goswami brought the most essential essence, highest teachings, and spoke only that in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And in Lord Ram's Leela, he's bringing a concluding focus on Sita's entrance into the earth. We may ask why. It's confusing. It's heartbreaking. It has made people into atheists, this particular section. It has made people angry at God. In order to understand the truth, we must hear from those who have realized the truth. Otherwise, human intelligence alone has no capacity to understand what is beyond material energy. The Lord's pastimes are divine. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tattva tatyakva deham punara janma naiti mameti surajuna. Krishna tells us that the divine, transcendental nature of my appearance and activities in this world, if we simply understand them in truth, we never have to take birth in this world but attain the supreme perfection of his abode. The spiritual platform of consciousness is beyond the senses, beyond the mind, beyond the intelligence, beyond the ego, beyond the grasp of our own abilities to comprehend. We must use our senses, our mind, and our intelligence with proper motivation and with proper guidance in order to understand. But ultimately, the real comprehension only comes through grace, through the grace of the Lord. Yegatamam prapadyante tamstathaiva bhajamyam. The Lord reveals himself according to our surrender. Through grace. And when we see through the eyes of that vision, premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena, the vision of love, then we see everything as it is. Therefore, this evam parampara praptam, the concept of parampara or disciplic succession, is self-realized souls who live by the highest virtues of compassion and wisdom. They have preserved the teachings in their original essence over time. Shukadev Goswami, who learned from Vyasadev, who learned from Narada, who learned from Brahma, who heard from Krishna. Shukadev Goswami, he's speaking about Sita's entering into the earth. Why Ram would banish her after she did everything for him? Recently we were in Rameshwaram for our South Indian Yatra. We discussed the absolute purity, chastity, and the highest realm of divine love that was personified by Sita. Sri Ram was banished to the forest for 14 years due to the influence of Kaikeyi, his stepmother. The banishment was only for him. Sita volunteered to go with him. Lord Sri Ram tried to convince her not to come. It would be torturous for a princess who was born with the greatest luxuries and protection and raised her whole life in that environment to be living in a jungle. No houses. Ram vowed he wouldn't even go into a village or a town for 14 years. He would remain exclusively in dark, deep jungles. No break. Wearing tree bark. Not eating any food that's prepared or cooked nicely, just herbs and roots and whatever you can find in the trees or in the ground. But Sita, her love for him, she insisted. She would not take no for an answer. She had to go with Ram because her life was for him, for his pleasure. And despite every type of temptation, every type of threat, she never once even considered in her mind any of Ravana's proposals. She was alone. She was being threatened by torture and death. She was being seduced with luxuries, power, pleasures beyond conception. It is not that Sita Devi somehow or other curbed her inclinations for these things to remain faithful to Sri Ram. There was never even in that entire almost year even a fraction of a second where she considered in her conscious or subconsciousness anything but the loving service of Sri Ram. And Lord Ram, to glorify her for all time to come, rejected her. When the war was over and she came back to Sri Ram, Hanuman blissfully gave her the news. Vibhishan brought her back after arranging a nice bath for her. And Ram indifferently said, you can go anywhere you want. I can no longer be with you. You've been with another man. Hanuman, Vibhishan, Lakshman, Sita, everyone was weeping. Ram, how can you do this? After all, she's done for you. Sita told Lakshman, get wood, start a fire. I will enter the fire. I will not live without my beloved Ram. They just fought this entire war just to get Sita back. And Lakshman looked at Ram. You're not gonna allow this to happen. Ram shook his head. Yes, get the wood. Start the fire. She was weeping, crying. Circumambulated the fire, circumambulated Lord Ram, and spoke. If for even a moment I was not thinking of you with love and devotion, let this fire burn me. And if I have completely remained faithful in my love for you, then what can this fire do? And she walked right into the fire. It was a blazing, huge fire. She totally disappeared. No one could see her. She was consumed. At that point, everybody fell to their knees crying. Even Lord Ram could not control his emotions. He wept. Sita was gone. After some time, Agni Dev, the presiding deity of fire, appeared with Sita, who had no burns. She had a celestial dress that was fresh and clean. She even had beautiful garlands of flowers that were fully blossomed and fresh as she came out of this blazing fire. And Agni Dev testified for Sita's absolute purity of her love and devotion. And Ram and Sita were reunited. And Sri Ram explained, he had no doubts about Sita. But he wanted to glorify her love for all time to come. He wanted people to understand the purity of her love. He wanted so that nobody forever could ever have a doubt about the Supreme Goddess of Fortune. They returned to Ayodhya. He became king. She was queen for many years. But then some very ordinary type of man was having an argument with his wife, and he raised a doubt about Sita. And Ram heard it. Because in those days, sometimes great kings would dress like ordinary people and just mix with people without them knowing who you are, so they could hear what's really happening. What people are really talking about. Sometimes leaders, they have their own little circles of ministers or advisors, and they're really out of touch with the people. But great leaders, They don't control people. They serve the ordinary people. Like their own children. And in order to serve, you have to understand what is really, what's happening, what they're feeling, why they're feeling, how they're feeling, what I could do about it. That's the way Ram was with all of his people. So he heard this. From an external perspective, he told Lakshman, Sita likes to go on trips, bring her to Valmiki Muni's ashram for a trip. Sita was really excited about it. But then Lord Ram said, when you get there, tell her that she has to stay. She will not come back. Lakshman was in agony. How could he do this? His life, his soul, his everything was only to see Ram and Sita happy together. But he was a lover of Ram. Sita was so happy. She was in the chariot. When they were in the forest, he told her that you cannot return. You must stay here. And Lakshman witnessed the absolute breaking of her heart. But ultimately, although she lived for Ram and only Ram, when she was in the Ashokvan of Ravana, it was just for a little less than a year. And she always had hope. The only thing that kept her alive was the hope that Ram would come to rescue her at any moment. But now there was no hope. Now she was being told, in this incarnation, you will never see him again. How would she live? And she couldn't just give up her life because she was pregnant. With Ram's children. It's only children. And it wasn't that she's just born, then she leaves, because she had to raise them. And she did this. She said to Lakshman, if this is what is required to serve my Lord, if this is what is necessary to serve his mission, then whatever pain, whatever difficulty, I am willing to do so. Again, Sri Ram revealed the purity of love. Love is not about enjoying each other. It's about serving the heart of the beloved. In this incident, Lord Sri Ram was actually out of his infinite love for Sita, was blessing her with the realization of the highest experience of the ecstasy of love, which is love and separation. And Srila Prabhupada explains in these purports previous to this verse that separation from a loved one in this world can be extremely painful. Could be the most painful thing in all of creation. When someone who we have given our heart, our life to in love, when they die, or when they're away for long periods of time, can be inconsolable grief. But in that separation, in this world, it's usually only then when we really realize how much a person meant to me. We have a tendency to take each other for granted. When that person dies, then you start thinking of all the things you just forgot all about. And it's completely to the forefront of your consciousness how much that person means to me, how much I need that person. But they're gone. From a spiritual perspective, nobody's ever gone from existence. Nahanyate hanyamane sarire, the soul is eternal. Never dies. It's just through the facility of a physical body we no longer have that relationship or communication. On the spiritual level, we have an eternal relationship. The body is a sacred facility by which we can facilitate exchanges between souls. So when the body's dead, body's actually always dead. It's alive when the soul is in it. When the soul leaves the body, in the body, we understand its value because that was a medium by which we could communicate in this world in a very, very special way. There's sorrow, but there's also joy because we know that the soul has gone to the spiritual world or a very, very good place. So we jubilant for the person who we love, but we cry because that wonderful facility of exchanges is temporarily separated from us through the body. But the Lord teaches. Jayadvaita Maharaj was speaking about this the other day in class. On the spiritual platform, there are two ways, primarily, in which the Lord reciprocates love with his devotees. Sambhog and Vipralamba. In union and in separation. And the dynamics of how the two embellish each other's experience is a very profound philosophy. after separation from a loved one, the union or meeting becomes even more pleasing. So meeting is enhanced by separation on the spiritual platform. But higher even than that is the separation itself, is a profoundly deep form of meeting. Because in relation to God, God is always present. We are never separate from God. He's within our hearts. He's within every atom. He's everywhere. He hears our every word, our every prayer, our every thought. And for those who love Krishna, Krishna's eternally, always reciprocating. And in separation, rather than our love going out toward the object of our love, it has no alternative than to go deeper and deeper and deeper within. The pain of separation brings our love so deep into our heart. And the Lord within the heart is embracing that offering of love. And we are feeling his embrace. And in this way, it's the highest ecstasy. On the material level, pain is pain. On the spiritual level, pain is pleasure. This is not some sort of masochism. This is something very real, something very deep. Because the pain is an offering of love that's very, very deep and very... And in the spiritual world, all these varieties exist just to enhance the experience of loving exchanges. Everything is perfect. Om Purnam Adha Purnam Idam. Everything is full, complete. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for the external reason of delivering souls, he left his mother and wife, Sachi and Vishnupriya. Vishnupriya was very young, and Sachi Devi was very old. These are the two types of people that really need protection, is very old people and very young people. He was the only husband and the only son. But so that people would respect his position and therefore hear his words and take shelter of him and be liberated from their sufferings by doing so, Lord Chaitanya left them. On one level, we may say that he endured the pain of separation from his wife and mother, and they had to endure the pain of separation from him for the higher purpose of delivering, bestowing mercy, kindness upon so many others. And that is true. But there's something far deeper. They were never separated. Sachi and Vishnupriya were, and the Lord himself entered into a deeper and, we can't say higher because It's already the highest. But within the highest, there's variations of rasa, or spiritual experience. And there was an even deeper experience of love in separation. Sachi and Vishnupriya were never separate from the Lord. The Lord is eternally existing in His name. And according to the love in which we chant His name, the Lord will personally be there to accept our love and shower His love upon us. Can we imagine how Vishnupriya and Sachi Devi were chanting the holy names after He left to never return? And the Lord provided Vishnupriya through one of His associates a deity of Himself that she worshipped. Practically 24 hours a day, her love and separation was so deep there was no possibility of her even sleeping. And the deity is not different than the Lord. So their agony was the highest ecstasy. On the spiritual platform, there's no agony. It's only a particular, what we think of as agony in the spiritual world is only a very deep, intimate form of ecstasy. Vipralamba seva. And Vishnupriya was willing to, from an external perspective, she was willing to endure anything to serve the Lord's purpose. As was Sita. Krishna lived in Vrindavan for just about 11 years, having leelas with Nanda, Yashoda, the gopis, the gopas, and then boarding Akrura's chariot, he left. He said, "I'll be back." But he didn't come back. He stayed in Mathura, then went to Dwaraka. And we read about the gopis' feelings of separation. They were mad in separation. When Krishna was living in Vrindavan, the gopis cursed the Creator for putting eyelids on their eyes. Because when they were standing right in front of Krishna, when they blinked their eyes, it seemed like 12 years of being away from Krishna. That was the subtle intensity of their love. Now you're sitting here in class. You've probably, since I began the class, you've probably blinked your eyes over 100 times. And because I'm telling you, you're thinking, yes, probably I did. But if I didn't tell you, how many of you have been thinking during this class that your eyes are blinking? We don't even notice it. It's called a nimesh. It's not even a 13th of a second when the upper part of the eyelid and the lower part touch in a blink, in an involuntary blink. And in the Sanskrit scriptures, that amount of time is called a moment. But for gopis, that involuntary blink seemed like 12 years. And that was when Krishna was standing right in front of them, inches away. And now he left.
Why did he leave?
Yes. He had to bear separation from them, and they had to bear separation for him because he had to do the work of his incarnation. Kamsa, Jarasandha, Shishupal, Salva, Kalyavana, all these asuras were there. So he was there to rescue the world, to speak Bhagavad Gita. Lord Chaitanya went out to do the same, to slay the ignorance. Krishna did it with the Sudarshan Chakra and other weapons. Lord Chaitanya did it with the holy names, transforming, as we saw in the drama, transforming Jagai and Madhai into saints. So Lord Chaitanya took sannyas for the same reason Krishna left Vrindavan. And essentially for the same exact reason that Ram left Ayodhya. To liberate Ravana and Kumbhakarna and Indrajit and Viradha and all the others. But in the process, that love and separation brought them more intimately closer together. The gopas and the gopis of Vrindavan, 24 hours a day, were absorbed in serving Krishna in separation. Their tears were offerings of ecstatic love. Said they cried the rest of their lives. But it wasn't like material separation, because it was bringing them, in reality, personally closer than ever before. And Lord Chaitanya told that love of the gopis in separation is the highest expression of ecstatic spiritual experience. Billions and trillions of times beyond liberation, beyond nirvana, even beyond living in the planet with the Lord, is these feelings of love and separation. And in truth, Lord Ram wanted to share this experience with Sita. He wanted to share it within his own heart, and he wanted to share it within Sita's heart. She was in Valmiki's ashram, he was in Ayodhya. Were they ever separated for a moment? Not possible. He was constantly thinking of her. She was constantly thinking of her in the highest love. And in that consciousness, they were together in truth. In Delhi, New Delhi, Srila Prabhupada named the deities Radha, Partha, Sarati. Partha Sarati means the chariot driver of Arjuna, which is Kurukshetra. So there's a tape recording where such one devotee, very scholarly devotee, asked Srila Prabhupada, Radha wasn't with Krishna in Kurukshetra. When he was driving Arjuna's chariot, it was in the middle of a war. Radharani was in Vrindavan. So why Radha Partha Sarati? Radha and the chariot driver of Arjuna. And Srila Prabhupada, he revealed a higher truth. He said, do you think on that chariot that Krishna wasn't totally absorbed in remembering Sri Radha in his heart? And do you think that Radha ever forgets Krishna in her heart? They were most intimately together in separation. Srila Prabhupada brought us right to the very, very essence. So yes, in Valmiki Muni's ashram, Sita Ram were always together. But they were together more intimately, more ecstatically than ever before. And Rama simply wanted Sita to have that experience of this aspect of his love. And he wanted to experience that aspect of Sita's love. Embracing one another within the hearts. Krishna consciousness means we connect with Krishna through our consciousness. We can be standing before the deity of the Lord, we could be chanting the holy name of the Lord, and Krishna is there in those ways. But if our consciousness is not absorbed in a spirit of love and service, then we're standing before Krishna's deity and we're thinking about some mundane anxiety we're going through, and we forget that he's even standing in front of us. Have any of you ever had that experience? Our Krishna is personally dancing on our tongue in ecstasy when we're chanting his name, and we're thinking about so many things, we forget he's even there. That real connection with Krishna is in our consciousness. It's not subjected to physical proximity. It's an eternal reality that we connect to through our consciousness. That is always a truth. When Srila Prabhupada was on the Jaladuta, after having heart attacks and seasickness, he wrote in his diary that I am so far from Vrindavan. And I'm remembering Radha Govinda, Radha Damodar, Radha Gopinath, Radha Madan Mohan, so far away from Vrindavan. But he revealed to us that he was in Vrindavan. Because in remembering Vrindavan in that way, you are there. If you're in Vrindavan thinking about your business in Bombay, you're not really in Vrindavan. You're in Bombay. But if you're in Bombay feeling separation from Vrindavan, you're in Vrindavan. Because Krishna manifests through our consciousness. So when people wonder why did Ram banish Sita, he never banished Sita. Never from his heart, or never would he ever leave her heart. In the physical distance between them, the love, the ecstasy that they shared within their hearts was deeper, greater, and more than ever. It was a divine reality. And Sita performed her duty in loving separation from Sri Ram. Sita got to experience what Radharani and the gopis experience. Ram rewarded her with that ecstasy, and he tasted it himself. In Kurukshetra, during Rath Yatra, Lord Chaitanya revealed Krishna's mood in separation from gopis. When he was dancing in front of Lord Jagannath in the mood of Radharani, bringing Krishna back to Vrindavan. And the Lord revealed Sri Radha's heart and Krishna's heart. Radharani was praying, please come back. And Krishna said, actually, I can't live without you and you can't live without me. Every day I enter into your heart and I reciprocate with your love. And that's what keeps you alive and that's what keeps me alive. We're never separate. After Sita raised Lava and Kusha, the two children of Ram that she gave birth to, and entrusted them to Valmiki Muni, she realized the mission of her Lord. They had completed what they had incarnated in the world to do. And we know the story of Sita's birth. Ram had appeared. And Sita appeared, Ram appeared in Ayodhya, and Sita, it was her time to come for the purpose of uniting with her eternal consort in this world. Not an ordinary birth. There was a drought. Oftentimes the greatest things come in the most difficult times. So the king, Janak, he was plowing a field with Brahmins for the purpose of preparing for a yajna, a ceremony. And as he was plowing the field, from beneath the earth, a most beautiful baby girl appeared. Sita was born of the earth. So from an ecological or environmental perspective. You know, we hear about save the earth. Don't pollute the earth. Statistically, the way the earth is today, for every truckload of food that we take from Mother Earth, we deposit in her many, many truckloads of waste. That's not the way it's supposed to be. It's just the way we have made it. Because we don't really have proper understanding. Mother Earth. Bhumi, Mother Earth, is the consort of Varahadev. From a Vedic perspective, Mother Earth is, within the material realm, a consort of the Supreme Lord. She's an expansion of Radharani, of Lakshmi. And in this case, she's the mother of Sita. Yes? She's the mother of Sita.
makes us feel a little guilty about even walking on her with our feet. But we have no choice about that. So at least we should be walking to the right place. And we should be walking with the right mood of devotion. Here's the mother of Sita, the consort of God, and I'm walking on her with my feet. I have no choice about that. We should humble us that we're walking on Mother Earth. We don't have to feel guilty about it. We should feel grateful. Here is the supreme, the goddess of fortune in this form, who's taking such a humble position. She has all of us walking on her. And we're passing stool on her. And we're passing urine on her. Even if we do it in a toilet, ultimately it goes to her, right? So what are we supposed to do? This is how humble the Lord is. Accept such a position for us. But if we have the right motive, if our stool and urine is redigested prasad, if our walking is to go to the right place and we're living a proper life, then all of whatever, then Mother Earth accepts whatever we do as an offering of love. How do you go? That's nicely inconceivable, isn't it? She's happy with our feet when we dance upon her head, singing in kirtan, or going somewhere with a pure motive. So environmentalism, from a spiritual perspective, is honoring our mother. Honoring the mother of Sita. Gives a very deep spiritual consciousness to our everyday life. What are we doing? What responsibility are we taking? How are we reciprocating? And after Lava and Kusha, were grown up to a certain extent, Sita understood the Lord's mission. Yes, it was a combination of the intensity of her separation. It was time for the Sambhog, the meeting. And that meeting would not be in this world, it would be in Vaikuntha, their eternal home. The Lord comes to this world for our sake. The Lord fulfilled his purpose, and she knew that. And to accommodate his lila, she entered back into the earth and disappeared. She came from the earth. She went back into the earth. And when Ram heard this, he was besides himself in the grief of ecstasy of separation. And for a long time, he performed this Agnihotra. It is described here. He observed complete celibacy and performed an uninterrupted Agnihotra Yajna for 13,000 years. Totally absorbed in separation of Sita. And then he himself disappeared from the world. So on one level, all of these various incidents were systematically supporting the purpose of their pastimes and ever increasing the love of their relationship. Sita understood the Lord has completed his mission and this is the way he wants to go, to follow me. She left and he followed. And Sambhog reunited together forever in Vaikuntha. But again and again coming to this world to do the same thing for us. And in this beautiful pastime, or this beautiful purport of Srila Prabhupada, he's explaining the nature of the Lord's way of inciting deeper feelings of love within his devotee. There's infinite variety in the realm of prema, or love. We've been discussing separation. Here, Shukadev Goswami and Srila Prabhupada are describing something like separation. The Lord stepping on thorns. The Lord stepping on grains of sand. This is inconceivable. Can only be understood by grace. Because the Lord is not affected by anything of this material existence. He's transcendental. He's not like us. He's beyond the threefold miseries of miseries caused by the body and mind, miseries caused by other living beings, miseries caused by natural disturbances. We're always plagued by these things, potentially. But the Lord is Tribir Guna Mayaya Bhavaya. He's above this material existence. He's transcendental. So if he's transcendental, why does a devotee crying, thinking the Lord in Vrindavan, when Krishna is going out to herd the cows, Yashoda Mai makes a pair of shoes for him because she can't bear the fact. With her own hands, she makes shoes for him. With love, with devotion. How is it possible for Krishna, with his bare feet, which are so soft, they're softer than the softest of anything. They make lotus flowers like rocks in comparison. The gopis were thinking the softest part of my body may hurt Krishna's feet because they're so much softer. And Yashoda is thinking, he's all day he's going through forests and pastures. There's stones, there's pebbles, there's rocks, there's thorns. She made shoes for him. And Krishna looked at the shoes and said, I am just a servant of my cows. I cannot have something my cows don't have. Unless you make shoes for all my cows, I will not wear shoes. Now Krishna had 900,000 cows. And each of them have 4 feet. So for those mathematicians, how many shoes would she have to make? Huh? 3,600,000. I'm not going to say it on the microphone unless you verify it. But it's a lot of shoes. So he was barefoot. And gopis were crying, thinking he may step on a grain of sand. and it will scratch him. Now for us, when we walk on sand, it feels nice, doesn't it? But for gopis, the sand may scratch him. That's how subtle their love was. What to speak of thorns? And in the same way, Ramchandra, when he went into the forest, he was barefoot. Dandakaranya forest. People of Ayodhya were thinking of that. That was their meditation. Sita and Ram are walking barefoot through jungles. What will happen? It's unbearable. Now, there's no pain for the Lord or Sita. They're transcendental to material things. But this consciousness is born of an intimacy of love and the thought that he'll be hurt by the thorn or the grain of sand or the stone increases the intensity of their love, their absorption. And Krishna arranges it like that. So here it is explained that after completing the sacrifice, Lord Ram, whose lotus feet were sometimes pierced by thorns when he lived in Dandakaranya, when we go on our Vrindavan Yatra, we oftentimes quote one Vrijabasi saint who wrote a poem that because people do their parikramas in Vrindavan without shoes. And there are many, many thorns in Vrindavan. We all have that experience if we have been there. Some places where we have gone, every step is full of thorns. You have that experience? And some of them go really deep. There's so many varieties of thorns. Some prick, some stick, some stab, some lacerate. But this saint wrote that I feel ecstasy hundreds of millions of times more than the ecstasy of mukti every time a thorn of Vrindavan pierces my foot. When, oh when, will that realization be ours? So for Ram or for Krishna, when a little thorn is in their foot, they're feeling in that thorn the ecstasy of the love in the heart of their devotees who are crying over the thorn going in his foot. Yes? He's not feeling the thorn, he's feeling the love, the consciousness. And after completing the sacrifice, Lord Ramchandra, whose lotus feet were sometimes pierced by thorns when he lived in Dandakaranya, placed those lotus feet in the hearts of those who always think of him. Then he entered his own abode, Vaikuntha. This is such a beautiful poetic description of the Lord's leaving this world to return to the spiritual world. Before he left, he placed his lotus feet in the hearts of each and every one of his devotees who always think of him. That means he, like a prana pratishta, He installed himself within the heart of every devotee. And then he left for Vaikuntha, which means he never really left. He lives forever within our hearts if we always think of him. And how to always think of him? Lord Chaitanya told us the easy way, just to adopt that humble spirit. Trinadapi sunichena taror ibasi hishnuna amani namana dena kirtaniya sadahari. This is the actual process of having Krishna forever present within our heart and feeling him and seeing him and reciprocating with him. Through developing this mood to serve with humility like grass, tolerance, forgiveness like tree, offer all respect to others, expect none in return. And Krishna will manifest himself forever within our hearts as we chant his holy name. Is there any question? Yes. Yes. Our temple's greatest authority on Ramayana.
Maharaj, talking about feelings of separation, which you were mentioning about Sita Ram and about Vishnu Priya also and the gopis, this always used to be that doubt in my mind, is that Mahaprabhu left Vishnu Priya. At the same time, our six Goswamis, specifically Raghunath Das Goswami, Rup Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, they also left their wives and they accepted renounce order of life. After leaving, after becoming a sannyasi, no doubt they having a sannyas order, so they cannot speak anything about their wife. So I can understand that in Chaitanya Charitamrita, whenever Mahaprabhu used to speak only about Sachi Mata, but not at all mention about Vishnu Priya. But finally he was the Lord. There was no reciprocation the way Krishna reciprocated with the gopis in Kurukshetra. And gopis are pacified that Krishna really loved them. In the same way, we couldn't see any reciprocation of Mahaprabhu and our Goswamis with their wife, where they were proved that they really cared for him. Although the relationship of being a sannyasi, they could not talk or they could not have any association. But the heart to heart, at least, we couldn't see anywhere where they felt that their beloved husbands were really caring for them and they're having loving reciprocation. Although externally there should not be any relationship. That type of a feeling we couldn't see it. So we felt it that, is it Lord is little bit insensitive in relationship into this? Or, I don't know, Mara, but I, this doubt I always used to see. That he loves everybody. And many devotees has so much intimate relationship and is so sensitive. Then why it is so with, not with their wives so much as such?
Take nice care of your wife. Perhaps we cannot see, but we see through our ears and we understand the truth. Ram never communicated with Sita either on a verbal level. Krishna did meet them in Kurukshetra, and ultimately Krishna went back to Vrindavan and performed Rasa Leelas and took them all to Goloka. But after long years of separation. But in that separation, they were always together. So Ram was trying to show the exemplary conduct of a great king who's so responsible to keep the faith of the citizens or a leader. And he made that ultimate sacrifice for that purpose, to set the highest standard for a leader within this world. And Lord Chaitanya did the same as a sannyasi, trying to show the very highest standard. But we understand through the acharyas, through the philosophy, that Vishnu Priya is the eternal consort of the Lord. They were always together. And the Lord did express it in his own way. He had the deity made for her. And in that deity, he was with her 24 hours a day, accepting her love, accepting her offerings. And in her heart. So he did it in a way that served all purposes perfectly. And this we know. This we know and we understand. Although we may not see specific dialogues, the dialogue was very deeply within. Every prayer that she offered, he heard from within. And he reciprocated. They were never separated. Does that answer your question? Because nothing was mentioned, that what could I say? Do you want me to make something up? I'm not allowed to do that. But they were not eternal consorts. Raghunath Das Goswami was totally absorbed in remembering Radha and Krishna and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was playing the role of a sadhaka, teaching prayojana, the highest love. So in Sri Raghunath Das Goswami's total absorption in constantly remembering the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani and Sri Gopinath and Lord Chaitanya, who was Radha Gopinath, in that total absorption, like watering the root of a tree, every living being is being given his love through his pure love for Radha and Krishna. And we could safely assume that his wife, being instrumental in this incredible leela, remembering him, she must have attained the highest liberation. Yes? Krishna promises. Look at Prahlad. Prahlad was not necessarily remembering his great, 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 great grandfather, Narsingadev told him, because you have surrendered to me, 10 generations of all your relatives in the past and the future, they all get liberated. Yes? So Raghunath Das Goswami, he showed the highest compassion to his whole family by always remembering Krishna and Sri Radha and the groves of Vrindavan and not fixing his attention to anything else. All of his relatives for 10 generations past and future were all given the highest liberation.
answer your question. Yes, Nityananda Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. We always hear that service is a manifestation of love for Guru and Krishna. And we also hear that the spontaneous loving affection is a fruit which comes later. And right now we should do perform our service. But also we hear that we should have a heartfelt loving affection for the Guru and Krishna while performing the services. But it also happens that when you're performing our service, we do it as a mechanically without that mood of I'm doing this for loving my spiritual master. So how can we do services at the same time understand or have the mood that this is for this is offering of love for the spiritual master?
Whether we feel or not feel at the moment is something that may be beyond our control. But what is within our control is our intent. When we make an offering to the deity, when we're serving our guru, when we're serving the Vaishnavas, we may or may not feel deep affection. But it is our intent to have that deep affection. And we're doing it so that we can develop that deep affection. Because we're trying to please them. Whether you feel or not, if your intent is to please them, that is affection. If you feel something, but you do something, if you feel affection for somebody, but then do what displeases them, is that very affectionate? But even if you don't feel it, if you have the proper intent, then beyond just the sentiment of affection, the actual realization of love awakens. So we should try to cultivate that affection by putting the right water on the right, on the root. Through our sadhana, through our service, through our character, through our relationships, we're trying to develop that affection. Try to express that affection. We may sometimes feel, we may sometimes not feel. That's not very important. What's important is our intent. And that we express our intent by acting in a way that will positively nourish that love within us. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.